The Monocle Quality of Life Conference returns, and this time we're touching down in Zurich. Join Monocle's editors and a lineup of tack-sharp panellists for lively debate, informed conversation, and top-notch hospitality from the 28th to the 30th of June. Find out more and book your ticket now at conference.monocle.com.
Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on the programme...
As our way of working and setting up families changes, the number of pets who come live with us is growing, and our cities aren't always ready for their furry or feathered presence.
As you might have guessed by now, this week's episode is all about animals in our cities, from backyard chickens to the joys of birdwatching in a city, and even entrepreneurs dedicated to making life easier for your furrier friends. No, not him. Plus, how can we design our public spaces in a more animal-friendly way? That's all coming up over the next 30 minutes, right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. And we start today's episode of The Urbanist with a look at the sky. Well, sort of. You see, most books about birds talk about species that live deep in the countryside. But what about our city dwellers who also enjoy a spot of bird watching? Well, a new book by Lawrence King Publishing called City Birds, an Urban Birdwatching Logbook, features 50 birds from cities around the world, from the house sparrow to the flamboyant African paradise flycatcher. And it was all illustrated by Christine Berry, who's a birdwatcher herself. Earlier, she spoke with Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
I actually live in a place where we get a lot of different garden birds, so I don't have to venture too far to be able to see them live and just to draw them as they're in front of me and moving around. Some of the birds that I've drawn that are from different parts of the world, I'll maybe use reference pictures from online or from books, but I'll use a lot of different images for one image and just use all the images to inspire me to make something new, to make a new drawing from them. I used to go birdwatching a lot, especially when I was younger. I was a member of the Young Ornithologist Club and the RSPB, so it's definitely quite a big interest of mine.
It's fantastic because your book is all about city birds. It's nice because, you know, not everyone can go, you know, to a bird reserve or to the countryside every time. So it's nice to acknowledge that even in a big city, you can find those. For example, you know, I live in London, and there's quite a few birds from London in your book as well.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, for anyone that's interested in birds that can't easily venture out to the countryside or a forest or more natural settings, there's plenty of birds to be seen within the city. And I suppose they're also easier to observe than birds that live in more natural settings. Of course, they're used to humans and they're a little bit tamer as well. But I find it hard to imagine being in a city without being able to see any birds or hear any bird calls. I think birds contribute a lot to the spirit and the character of a city.
And it's also, I must add, a very interactive book because there are some parts where you can add the time and date you've seen them, the location, yeah. If they're female, male, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and the stickers as well. It just gives you a really good visual guide and something to keep and carry about with you if you travel a lot as well.
Well, and tell us now for people who live in big cities, for example, London, which birds from London can you see it in the book?
You can actually see a lot of birds in London. I used to live in London. I lived in London for about 10 years. So you can find a surprising amount. You can get sparrows, starlings, things like goldfinches, wood pigeons, wagtails. You get blue tits, great tits. You can also get wagtails and blackbirds, crows, jackdaws, magpies. And then, of course, there's the London parks as well, where you might find things like jays, different finches, different garden birds, and of course you've got the ring-necked parakeets as well.
And actually the parakeets are kind of a new addition as well to the yes. Londoner. And you know, a lot of people don't like them. I love it. I think they add a bit of colour to the
whole
thing.
Yeah, yeah. They're noisy birds, but they've got so much character, and you quite often hear them before you see them, but they're quite a striking sight as well. The streak of green across the sky as they're flying around.
here at the office, I always see, because I sit close to a window, a family of European robins, you know, like flying around. They're very cute as well. And it's the number 20 in your book, I have to add.
You can quite often see robins in lots of different places now, both in rural settings and urban environments as well. Yeah, they're good birds to sit and watch.
Do you have a favourite bird, perhaps from the ones that are included in the book?
A starling, actually. I mean, they're a bird that most people will be familiar with, but I just think they're really interesting birds. When you see them up close, they're actually really beautifully coloured, sort of iridescent purple and green that looks almost metallic, and lots of little white speckles as well. But when you see them walking around on the ground, they've got quite a comical, lively way of moving around. But when they take to the sky in a group just before they settle down to roost in the evening, you'll see the most amazing display, a sort of massive starling. It's actually called a murmuration. And they'll swoop and dive and make all sorts of shapes as this big group of birds. And it's really quite an amazing sight. The starling was an enjoyable bird to draw for the book as well. It's got quite a distinctive shape and a little pointy beak and all the little details of its plumage as well. It's a good one to draw.
What's the hardest one to draw? Because, you know, I think sometimes, of course, you know, colourful ones, for example, the European bee eater, I would imagine it's kind of straightforward for you. But, for example, a simple one like the house sparrow, I think this one might be difficult. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. Some of the more sort of exotic, colourful birds, when you draw them, you can break them up into the different colours and shapes. Yeah, some of the more sort of monochrome birds are more difficult to draw, such as the house sparrow, as you say. They're the ones that have the more detail in them. They're a little bit harder to capture.
Christina, how would you advise? Because I've noticed, especially here in London, there's an increasing number of young bird watchers, actually. And, you know, some people like to draw as well. Would you have any tip for someone who would like to sit down in a park in their own city and give it a go? Try to draw one of the birds.
Yeah. I would certainly encourage it. It's quite an enjoyable thing to do. I think you'd have to have a little bit of patience and find a nice, quiet spot. But as I say, certainly in a lot of the parks, the birds, they can be quite tame. Some of the finches will even come and eat from your hand if you get the right things for them to eat. And then also there's the pond life as well, ducks and swans and things. So that might actually be quite a good starting point.
Well, that was the illustrator and birdwatcher Christine Berry, and she was speaking to Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Slovenia's capital, Ljubljana, is very much a dog-friendly city. There are plenty of parks, the centre is pedestrianised, and there's a long riverside promenade ideal for walkies. But all that activity makes for a hungry puppy. So the logical conclusion was to cross Slovenians' love of pastries with their passion for canine company. The result? A dog bakery. It's called Ho Ho, although written Hov Hov, which is the Slovenian for, you've guessed it, woof woof. And the first branch opened just 5 years ago, but it's been such a success, you can now find Ho Ho in Italy, Switzerland, Serbia and Croatia. Our man in Ljubljana, Guy Delorni, dropped in on the Slovenian capital's branch to get a treat.
Ljubljana is a city where you'll certainly see lots of people walking their dogs, and it's also a place where people are very happy to treat their dogs. If you're in the centre of the city, just nip down the side of the Hotel Slon, one of the poshest hotels in Ljubljana, and you'll find this place, Pasja Pekarna Ho Ho, and rather helpfully underneath it says Dog Bakery. Sure enough, look in the window and there's all sorts of things which look like gingerbread men, cookies and cakes. But these are not for human beings, they're for our canine friends.
My name is Mita Cernem, and I work in Dog Bakery in Ljubljana. Nastja Vernik is the boss and the mother of this dog bakery. She started to produce her own doggy treats for her dog. And then she, one Christmas time, she was baking for her friends, dogs, and they all love it. And so she started. She made it a bit bigger and bigger, and she started selling. And now this is a business.
Well, let's look around your shop here. If we just start on the counter, we can see under a standard sort of glass cake display case, you've got what look very much like muffins next to those, some to the untrained eye, Meta, these look like, say, a carrot cake, maybe, with the icing on top, a little paw print picked out in what looks like chocolate buttons, but I imagine isn't.
No.
And then all around the shelves here, you've got, okay, you do have some dog grooming products, but rows and rows of Ho-Ho brand doggy bites, all of different kinds of variety. I can see some are fish. I can see this one says Goodnight Kiss, and I've sneaked a look at the label. I know there's chamomile in it. What do the dogs enjoy about all these different things?
I think the dogs enjoy the mostly the taste and different meat, because we use fresh meat or fresh fish to put it in. And the owners, they also enjoy how nicely the stuff is packed, and that we also... as we produce it, we make it also beautiful.
More customers. I better let you serve the customers. Are you regular customers here at all?
Case by case. My granddaughter has two dogs, and when she celebrates something, then we buy her something. When you need something for dogs, then it's the right place here.
And what's the name of your granddaughter's dog?
Pika, Point, Pika, and Lily. Lily.
Oh, so two dogs, Pika
like
and Lily.
Like Lily Merlin.
Okay. And, what did you buy today? What's in the bag?
A cake.
Two cakes
for
and...
Special cake.
Oh.
Yeah.
Special dog biscuits.
Yes. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I hope that Pika and Lily and, of course, your granddaughter are very happy with that. Thanks for taking the time
to
talk.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I was going to ask you what kind of customers you get, Meta, because one might think dog bakery.
Yeah.
You'd think people with a lot of money to spare.
Yeah.
But we've seen, while we've been studying in the shop, people, one guy in a railway jacket, works for the railways.
Yeah.
These two people look like very normal grandparents.
Yeah.
So what sort of range of customers do you get?
Very different. People come from all different parts of Slovenia. Mm. I think it's nice because people are aware of how important it is to give your dog a good, healthy meal or a good doggy treats, which are healthy. So I think this is very nice.
What's the process for coming up and testing out the new flavours, the new products? I presume you have some sort of now well-honed technique for finding out what's going to work.
Yeah, Nastya, who is the owner, she has a dog, and her mom, she has a dog, and her friends, they have dogs. So there are a couple of dogs who try new findings or new recipes, could try out the new recipes, and if they approve it, if they like it, so it's probably going to work also for the other dogs. Oh, we have another customer. Yeah.
Are you a regular customer?
No, sorry.
I don't
have a dog, I have a cat.
Why are you here today? If you've...
Because my colleague is buying a present for her neighbor's dog.
Yeah.
As you do.
Birthday.
Interesting. I see there's both an Easter egg and a happy birthday bow in there.
Do you think
the dog can read?
No, but he will eat it.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, but the neighbor will read it.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Bye-bye. Well, looking around the shelves at Ho-Ho, it's very clear that Ljubljana is a city full of people who love their dogs and do want to give them a healthy treat from time to time.
A report there by a very well-behaved correspondent, Monocle's Guy Delaunay in Slovenia. Some cities may well be trying to foster a varied fauna of butterflies and bees, but streets, parks and rooftops hardly ever offer a warm welcome to either pooches, birds, let alone a mouse. Pigeons, for example, have long been shooed away from balconies with methods that seem to borrow from the medieval torture chambers. Off the leash, dogs are confined to gated corners, and most restaurants remain well beyond a paw's reach. But has the time come for cities to reflect on how hostile they are towards non-human inhabitants? Monocle writer Chiara Ramella explores the small design fixes that can nicely keep pests at bay and pets close by.
Whenever I leave my family home with Reno on the lead, my dog and I are faced with two options. Turn left out of the gate and head into the neighbourhood, across the six-lane carriageway and onto busy pavements on the way to the market. Or turn right and head down a quiet side street all the way to one of Turin's biggest parks and its spacious free-roaming dog area. Rather unsurprisingly, Reno's snout often points right. The prospect of a run unconstrained by the collar is too enticing to resist. But the option somehow relieves me too. Walking my dog down the city's streets often brings up some problems, and not just because of his predisposition to step in front of traffic. Will the dry cleaners where I'm dropping off a coat let him in too? What about the cafe, the pharmacy, or the newsagents? Cities are designed, to varying degrees of success, with humans in mind. But as our way of working and setting up families changes, the number of pets who come live with us is growing, and our cities aren't always ready for their furry or feathered presence. It's not just as easy as adding some extra parks for dogs to stretch their legs in. Not all crammed urban centres can afford making room for gardens. And what about all other pets? Cats, cockatoos and chinchillas included. Those animals, which are normally flat-bound, have all rights to get a spot in the sun too. Why not make the most of our apartment blocks, our rooftops and our streets instead? Anybody who's ever rented a room from London to Sydney will be well familiar with the clause on the contract that says, no pets allowed. Landlords are notoriously hostile to non-human housemates. They shed hair, sometimes they bark, and worse still, what if they're not properly potty trained? But as the percentage of potential home buyers and renters who come with pets in tow increases, developers are discovering a market for properties designed with animal inhabitants in mind. Walls with better sound insulation can be built to prevent rude awakenings from a late-night canine concerto. Condos in the US have started adding dog washing rooms complete with tubs, hoses and blow dryers on their ground floor, alongside gyms and spas for two-legged residents. Some have got day boarding facilities and vet clinics to solve all kinds of pet ailments. As for our skyscrapers' rooftops, if they can double up as room for urban farms or beehives, what prevents them from turning into proper roaming grounds for felines, complete with tree trunks to scratch, ledges to climb, and, fundamentally, very good ring fencing? Cities like Zurich have long made use of small ladders poking out of first-floor windows to let cats who live upstairs join in the fun at ground level when the owners aren't in. If these multi-level stairs are engineered to lead to a shared, protected courtyard in between apartment blocks, this design fix could well be exported to higher-built neighbourhoods too. Developing ways of being kind to those pets we do want on our streets and in our homes is hard enough in the urban environment. Imagine how difficult it becomes when the animals in question are the eternally unwanted inhabitants of our cellars and attics. Pests that are at best considered a nuisance. Cultivating a varied urban fauna has become a point of pride for many cities that are running official programs of wildification. But the wildlife we want to see more of among spatterings of urban greenery is probably in the realm of beautiful birds, butterflies and bees. Think of the most omnipresent and most berated of urban animals, the humble pigeon. Flourishing inner-city pest control businesses have long dealt with them and other euphemistically called urban issues with equally euphemistically called management systems that involve methods nothing short of gory. Yet these days, impaling spikes and poison have lost their market appeal. Consciences dictate downright killings are to be avoided. So what palatable options are left to keep pests at bay? Plenty of architectural principles can be followed to make sure a home is sealed off from the onslaught of creepy crawlers and rodents. They consist mainly of choosing the right, resistant materials and making sure all possible entryways are shut. But another design solution is now ruling the roost when it comes to the business of shooing the pigeons away. Raise your eyes to the balconies, fences and walls of cities from London to LA and you'll see them. Owl-shaped bird scarers have become a global design success. With their somewhat eerie sideways stance, they manage to scare pigeons away without harming them in the process. These small but kind urban interventions may well prove it is time for cities to stop being hostile, even towards its least loved of inhabitants. It's an approach that seems to be taking flight.
That was Monocle's Chiara Rimella. And we wrap up today's episode in Seattle. Now, all over the world, backyard chickens are becoming popular, not just as a sustainable source of eggs in the growing local food movement, but also as funny, quirky pets. But would-be chicken farmers are often finding that their city's laws are less welcoming to backyard poultry than they would wish, forcing them to hatch a plan. Reporter Eilish O'Neill brings us this story over the fight to legalise chickens in a Seattle suburb.
Redmond, Washington is an unlikely crime scene. It's the city of Microsoft, a place where the steep, winding streets have speed bumps to slow down cars, and pretty much everyone lives in a single-family home with a decent-sized backyard. Kathy Dennis has lived here for years. In 2010, her then 13-year-old daughter persuaded her they should put that backyard to good use by getting a couple of chickens. So Kathy studied the options.
Some chickens will lay better than others, and I wanted to have ones that were good layers. And also, you want to make sure you don't get ones that are good at flying because you don't want them to leave your yard. You want ones that are pretty friendly breeds, too.
They made their choice of breeds and got three little chicks.
Oh, they were cute little fuzzy yellow chicks. And then they get their teenage feathers and they look really awful. They kind of still have some fluffy stuff. The feathers are starting to grow, but they're just kind of ugly. And then pretty soon they turn into beautiful hens.
That summer, they started laying eggs. The Dennises were enjoying their new pets, but their next door neighbor, not so much.
She didn't like the chickens. She said they were noisy. And I have to admit, they sometimes were noisy. When the sun comes up, they're up too.
Instead of telling Kathy that chickens were annoying, the neighbor called the city. And so someone from the city called Kathy. He told her,
"So your neighbor says you have chickens and you are not supposed to have chickens. It's not legal."
Kathy says it had never occurred to her that having chickens was illegal. But the law was the law, so Kathy sent the chickens off to a friend in the countryside. For most people, that would have been the end of the story. But not for Kathy.
You know, I was angry at my neighbor. I was sad I had to give up my chickens. And really, I thought maybe I could even get my chickens back.
She went to the Redmond City Council and asked them to change the chicken ordinance. But four of the seven council members were opposed.
One of them really just didn't think it was good for property values. He said, "They're going to bring in pests, they're going to be noisy, they're basically going to bring your neighbor's property values down by having chickens." And another person, it was interesting, he said, "I grew up on a farm with chickens," and he said, "I just don't think they belong in the city."
So Kathy started looking for other people who also wanted to legalize backyard poultry. She went to sustainability groups, she got articles in local newspapers.
Every other city in our area, Woodinville, Sammamish, Bellevue, Kirkland, they all allowed backyard chickens. And so at that point, it was also sort of like, why doesn't Redmond?
The battle between those who are for and those who are against backyard chickens has played out all over the U.S. In Washington, D.C., Ann Arbor, Michigan, Missoula, Montana. In Redmond, Kathy was able to rally enough support among voters that the city council decided to legalize backyard chickens. The law was changed, but it was too late for Kathy to get her chickens back.
A couple of them met a bobcat.
Instead, that spring, Kathy got new chickens. She now has four, two young and two old. She brought me to the backyard to be introduced.
I saved some treats here for them. They love Saturdays because they know they get waffles or pancakes. And this is Sally. There's Rosie. Hi, girls. Smudge is my queen bee, and if her little friend isn't with her, then she wants to know where she is. So she'll go check in the nest box, like, "Oh, there you are," and then she'll come out and still be making noise.
Fortunately, Kathy's neighbor has moved away, so no one's bothered by the noise.
I think it's really fun. They have personalities of their own, other than sort of destroying my garden paths. They're great for the garden. They create manure. They eat weeds. I don't have a single dandelion in my garden. And they produce eggs, too.
For Monocle in Seattle, I'm Eilish O'Neill.
And that's all we have for this edition of The Urbanist. The show was produced by Carlotta Ribello and edited by David Stevens. And our thanks also to Ben Rylan. To play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here are The Animals with House of the Rising Sun. Thank you for listening, city lovers. There is a house.